Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janice Wolf.
And welcome to For the Love of Dog with Janice Wolf. And I have some incredible news that I'm going to be talking about during the hour. A lot of it pertains to new opportunities and new developments in the field of not only, of course, canine care, but also the best of the best for your dog. Now, I don't know if you're like me, but I spend every penny I have on my dogs. My dogs are more than just a dog or more than a pet. They're really fur-covered humans. And we've all known we've had dogs through the years, and some dogs are great dogs. Some dogs are dogs with issues. But there are those dogs who you just know that they're not a dog, that somehow there's a person in there, and that they look at you and they look into your soul. They look into your heart and they know who's good around you, who's bad around you. They know what you need. They know when you need it. And we almost wish that our spouses and significant others and maybe parents and kids even would have such intuition for us and to us that these dogs are able to possess. So let's face it, we all love dogs. That's why you're there. That's why you're listening. That's why I'm broadcasting. We love dogs. So today we're going to talk about that special bond, that special relationship that we have with animals and why it's so important to kind of listen to your dog. Well, I was speaking with somebody who's actually a PhD in psychology and counseling and in the human world. Yet, as I was talking with her about her own dog, who has some really significant behavioral issues, she was saying, well, you know, if it were a person, I would think differently. If it were a person, I would do this or that. And I said, so why are you doing it differently? And she said, well, everyone says dogs don't think like we do. And I was like, you're right. They don't think like humans do. They think better than humans do. Dogs don't have an ulterior motive. Dogs don't hurt each other. Animals don't hurt each other unless it's business. Somebody's hungry. You got to eat. You got to kill another animal in order to eat, which many of us do, right? Unless you're vegan, and that's a whole other story. But the idea being, dogs do think. Dogs do communicate. We, as humans, are just, you know, basically a little bit, we have too much hubris, and we think, you know, animals are dumb. Now, let's just talk about that. Are animals able to do things that humans are able to? So think about it. Can you tell when your dog is mopey? Of course you can. Can your dog tell when you're mopey? Of course he can or she can. Can some dogs pick up behavioral issues because we've had a loss, we've experienced something terrible or tragic in our lives in that moment? Absolutely. So is it really so far-fetched for us to then think that our energy and our lifestyle might impact that dog's behavior? I don't think it's funny or odd at all. I think it's exactly on target. So those of you who have been writing, I've gotten a fair number of emails from people who have usually kind of a dominant breed dog. And for some reason, people will say, my dog just seems confused. If that's striking a chord with you right now and you're saying, yeah, you know something, Janice, my dog does seem confused. Let's go over that. Let's talk about why you're perceiving that your dog seems confused. Because you know what? He probably is. Now, what can confuse a dog? Okay, I talk about clarity, a lack of clarity. So what exactly does clarity mean? We know that it's making something clear, elucidating, or making more easily understood. Kind of the opposite of ambiguous, right? Or ambivalent. So if a dog is ambivalent about something and the dog doesn't seem to care, then that's not something that's probably creating problems with his behavior. But if a dog seems to be very on target, if a dog seems to be too interested in who's outside the door, if a dog seems too interested in a dog on a walk or on a person or whatever it is that it sees during that day, your dog probably is telling you that you need to pick up the reins and start doing more than you're doing. So not every dog is going to develop a behavioral issue. So let's think about it. How many dogs do you think in the United States, let's just say, have behavioral issues? And, you know, let's go crossbreeds and mixes and all the designer dogs that everybody's buying because they're cute and then they wind up not being what people thought. Let's go through the bad breeds, the pit bulls, the Rottweilers, the evil dogs, the Darth Vaders of the dog world. Keep that in mind. Or let's talk about Golden Retrievers or Cavalier King Charles Spaniels or whatever. Dogs are dogs. And dogs do what dogs do because they're dogs. Just like men do what men do because they're men. And we women don't understand anything that you guys do. And you guys don't understand much of what we think because we're communicating in a language that's different. Even within different races of or cultures of people, we'll say, oh my gosh, isn't that crazy? Well, it might be crazy to you because you don't understand from that person or that animal's perspective. But it doesn't make it wrong. And the only thing that I think is really wrong is when somebody gets hurt or killed or attacked or anything like that. Other than that, we should really be looking at why do we have so many behavioral issues with so many dogs? And why do those behavioral issues almost seem to pop up exactly when we have issues in our lives? Going back to the nice woman with the dog, it's a combination of two of the quote-unquote dangerous breeds. But this lovely woman has experienced a lot of loss in a short time. Her husband passed away. They lost a child, which is, I think, the worst thing anyone could ever go through. Her mother is dying. And she has a child with mental health issues. So you look at that situation, and what did she do? And a lot of people do this. When her spouse died, they got a dog right away within a month or two. They got a very dominant breed, combination of two dominant breeds, dog, who was a sweetheart. And they socialized him for a few months and made sure he got along with everyone. But think about the energy of the family, the whole family. How are you supposed to heal from losing your father, your spouse? How are you supposed to recover losing a child? How are you supposed to comport yourself when, let's face it, it's really just a matter of, you know, how much can you take? And we've all had horrible trials and tribulations, and we've all had wonderful successes. But your dog needs you now. Your dog needs you this very minute. If you have a dog with a behavioral issue, maybe you're the one who needs to address what's going on in your life. It doesn't mean this is with the case with every single person. Don't start writing me the hater mail, which I never really get, but don't write me and say, my dog came from a shelter. I got him last Wednesday and I haven't messed him up. Well, no, but someone did. Something happened, and because we can't get past the dog's past, because we're, oh, it's a rescuer, oh, you know, the dog, poor dog. Yeah, we all feel like that, but you have to also think, if you're not going to offer this animal a better future, and I don't mean by buying him things and giving him the best food and walking and all those things, but psychologically, yes, dogs think, dogs feel. Dogs are like wonderful creatures. They're the purity. They're the goodness in life. But that being said, dogs are dogs, and dogs do what dogs do because they're dogs. So let's talk about that. First of all, not every single dog is going to be capable of the feelings we're talking about. But many of them are. Most dogs are. And just as there are people who are more perceptive or less perceptive in life, so are there dogs who are more or less perceptive. You'll have a dog who's been in a family for 10 years through the worst of the worst of the worst, and that dog's never had a behavioral issue, not one single time. Thank you, lucky stars, on that one. But then there are those dogs, and I think many of you might know those dogs and call them your pet, but there are dogs who are empaths. They actually are empaths. They're the ones who feel. They're the ones who know when you're having a bad day. They're the ones who you say, oh, he's like my emotional support dog. Like a real dog, emotional support dog, that would be able to know when you're sad or when you're happy or when you need a hug or when there are bad things, when there are good things. And it's almost like that dog mirrors your feelings. That's what we're going to talk about. Exactly. Your dog is mirroring your feelings. So if you're having a horrible couple of years and you go and pick up or adopt or buy or whatever a dog of a dominant breed or a non-dominant breed, that just that individual is an empath. That individual dog is a the kind of dog who loves, 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 loves to be with you, to take care of you, to watch over you. It's the dog who gets up when you get up to go to the bathroom or to go get a snack. Dog isn't looking for food. He's not looking for anything. He just watches you. Those are the dogs that we should live and die for because those are the best ones. They're the dogs who have and possess very human qualities. And it always bothered me when you say humanity, to have humanity. It's like some badge of honor that, like, because humans are so wonderful that humanity should represent all the goodness in the world. And animality, right? That is supposed to represent all the unchecked carnage in the world, right? If you ask me, animality should be what humans are called, and humanity is what dogs have and give us. So if you say for a moment, you know something? My dog does seem to get worse when I'm upset. My dog is usually great with, so and so. But, we had an argument, and now my dog like snapped or growled at that same person that my dog usually likes. Why does that happen? Any ideas? Well, I'll tell you why. The reason that happens is because your dog is an empath. Your dog is an old soul. And he or she is able to feel what's inside of you and what's inside of others, which is why, and I get this question all the time, where people say, why is it that my dog hates my neighbor? Or why is it my dog barks at the one particular guy that my son brings in all the time? Like he hates this kid, and he seems like such a nice kid. Unless the dog perhaps is picking up on a health issue or something a bit unseemly, guess what? Maybe your dog is picking up on the fact that that person is not as good as you think he is. And we wouldn't know that, right? You can, there are cases we see all the time on the different, news shows where they look at somebody and they say, oh my gosh, they were best friends for 20 years. And then he up and just killed his best friend. Well, maybe people weren't what we thought they were. Maybe they were and they just got pushed too far because sometimes that happens. People take a sign of kindness for a sign of weakness, and perhaps somebody has evil in their hearts, and those people, are picked up. The dogs are kind of picking up on that. And we think, oh, it's just a dog. He doesn't know what's going on. It's like having a special needs child. You know what? Special needs kids and a lot of dogs, because that's why a lot of special needs kids connect with dogs and other animals. But, that happens because they can feel what we don't feel. They can do things that we don't understand. And it's like when people say, oh, dogs don't think like that. That's not what dogs think. I look at those people and I say, why? Because you say so? And they go, well, yeah, okay. And you're the expert because you've been a dog for how long? And, why would you think you're an expert on that? Some people do think, if I hear this one more time, right? I've had dogs my whole life. I'm a dog expert. My friends call me a dog whisperer. Well, guess what? You having dogs your whole life and having had three, four, five dogs versus someone who's a canine behaviorist with 35 plus years, don't think that you know everything because you probably know about 1% And that's where my dad always used to say, little knowledge is a dangerous thing, and people with a little power. Because people who have a little power and a little knowledge, it is a dangerous thing. Our goal should be, when we're working with our dogs, to listen to our dogs, to find out what they're thinking, to find out why. So what could make a dog kind of suddenly react and maybe bite someone or start growling at a particular person or dog? Because dogs can tell things that we can't, because we are humans. Humans don't possess the same skills and qualities and perhaps beauty and just naivete that dogs have. Dogs are pure. They're not full of pretense. They don't try to go on social media and try to hurt somebody or embarrass them or you know, do something evil, right? What do? They live in the moment. So when you start having a dog who is acting differently, you have to turn that within you. What are you doing differently? How are you comporting yourself? How are you acting, right? Are you acting like you're a victim? Are you seeing an ex-spouse or an ex-relationship? And in working with that person or seeing that person, you're getting nervous or anxious or frustrated or angry? Well, dogs are going to see that change in your behavior and in your energy as you being weak and unstable. Dogs won't follow an unstable leader or an unstable parent. People will, but dogs won't. Animals look and they see, geez, wow, there's this great person who's confident and comes in, doesn't stare at me, just does what he or she needs to do. And I know that if I stay with that person, I know I'm safe. And how do I know that? Because I trust that person and that person has great energy. Now, this isn't talking about crystals and energy. We're talking about what really is and how dogs can change and take our feelings and change them in themselves in a moment where the dog suddenly reacts in a very different way, even with the same person. So if you have a dog who's kind of developing behavioral issues, especially kind of quickly, there's a 2-month honeymoon period after you get a dog. And it's obviously with rescue dogs and shelter dogs. And it depends on, you know, the intensity. It depends on the breed, the age, the basic temperament of the dog. But after about 2 months, the dog kind of figures you out and looks and says, huh, this guy's not really strong. This guy seems very anxious, or this guy seems very frustrated. And all of a sudden, the dog is kind of feeling responsible for you. And in that moment that someone comes in who he doesn't know, or you're startled, the dog runs up and bites someone. Now, is that dog a biter? Is he aggressive? Is he a bad dog? Probably not. What he's doing, he's an empath. He's trying to feel what you feel, and he wants to make sure that he keeps you safe. That's where we start looking at the relationship, and all the behavior I do and United Canine Pros does at 855-449-9288. If you want to learn anything, or if you want to go and check out my more recent canine behavior book called Happens, SHHH. Happens, Dog Behavior 101. If you look and you read that book or you listen to today for our lecture, you're going to see that dogs can do and can be many things that we just don't understand. So if a dog feels that you're weak in that moment, let's say like with an ex-spouse or ex-boyfriend or girlfriend, and the dog feels that you're not doing the job to provide for his needs and yours, or to protect yourselves, then the dog may just in that moment think, huh, I love my mom, I love my dad. I want to make sure that I'm able to understand and protect my owner. And that's where dogs get in trouble. That's where I tell people, when you walk through that door, it's happy, happy, joy, joy. Why? Not because we're faking it, but because we have to make sure that our dogs are not picking up on our sadness. They're not picking up on the bad relationship that just ended. They're not picking up on the fact we just got fired and we don't have a job and now we're, you know, going to lose our home or our car or whatever it is that we work so hard for. And that's the point. It's the whole point. The dogs should not be responsible to worry about that kind of stuff, the same way you wouldn't put a 5-year-old kid in charge of, you know, getting your paying your mortgage and working and taking care of all the daily, the grind that we all do. So that's what I'm saying. Your dog is picking up on your energy. Dogs are pretty amazing creatures. I think animals are the best things in the world, way bigger and better than humans, because I think that dogs are pure, and animals in general, they're very real. They're no pretense. There's no hurtfulness. So that part of it is, I think, sometimes very tough for people to conceptualize. Why does your perfect dog all of a sudden hate the person who he used to love? Well, maybe the person is sick. Do you know my cancer and disease detection dogs, when I go out somewhere with them, people will look and they'll be like, gee, why is your dog so friendly with me? Or why is your dog, you know, poking me in the ribs on the side? Or why is your dog doing this or that? Because my dogs are trained to go out and smell sadness, right, via cortisol, cancer, and other health issues. And when my dogs, who are now trained and understand what that means, smell that either the cancer or the disease or the cortisol, they're trained and completely understand that this is not something they have to worry about, but it is something that they have to alert me about. Now, let's say you have a dog, and I hear this all the time, and you say, oh, you know, my dog used to be great with my grandmother. You know, she's been sick lately, and now my dog is like either guarding her or trying to bite her. Why is that? They were the best of friends. Well, just imagine if somebody you love passed away and then came back and reincarnated as some kind of a ghost or a spirit. Would you still be feeling that same kind of comfort level? Would you, if you saw that person's ghost coming back, wouldn't you be like, oh my God, you'd be so nervous? Well, dogs sometimes will pick up on health issues of others, but because they haven't been specifically trained like my dogs have been on what to do, the dogs can bite. They can start barking for no reason at all at a person they used to love. So you have to really look at dogs and say, my God, dogs are amazing. They're able to perceive things that humans cannot, or most humans cannot. So for today, I want you to kind of take home this point. Dogs are amazing. Can they feel? Do they think? Absolutely. And what you've got to do is work with your dog or dogs when you're not feeling well, or when you have that low moment, or when somebody is ill in your home. Take those dogs and do fun stuff with them, and don't come home angry. Don't come home depressed. God forbid you find out that somebody in your family close to you has some kind of illness or something wrong or going on. You know what I want you to do? I want you to cry outside, take care of it outside, not just outside the house, but, you know, at work or when you get out of work. But when you walk in that house, you do the best you can to walk in and show your dog that you're the same strong, calm, confident leader. You're the mom, and that nothing has changed. If your dog isn't picking up on the fact that you're sad or depressed or angry or anxious, then your dog will continue to remain that wonderful, well-behaved dog you've had. As soon as it starts impacting you and your emotions and the way you are perceived, most good dogs are going to say to themselves, hey, I love my mom, I love my dad, and therefore I have to take care of them. And sometimes that will be reflected in aggressive or very dominant behavior. It's up to you, folks. So we're going to be talking in a minute about our shelter dog to service dog show that'll be following in a moment. We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with For the Love of Dog. And welcome to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. And of course, Wyatt and Wispa and the Wolf Pack here. Today's a great day. We were talking earlier about how dogs are able to perceive our energy and how they really can feel what we feel. Well, now we're going to talk about your shelter or rescue dog or your personal pet who you might feel is going to be a good candidate to be a service dog or an emotional support dog, perhaps a therapy dog. And there's a huge difference, and we've spoken about this, and I want you to understand what makes a great dog into a great service dog, a great emotional support dog, or a great therapy dog. Well, let's start with this. If you have a dog who tends to take on a lot of personality traits of the owner, for instance, the owner gets really bummed out and the dog gets really depressed. That would be a great service dog because the dog is trying to take on and kind of nurture the owner, right? Would it be a great emotional support dog? Potentially, because emotional support dogs really don't have training, but hopefully we're going to have some regulations that will help people to be able to have good emotional support dogs that, of course, wouldn't be task trained, but would be well behaved. But would that dog who's the empath be a good therapy dog? Maybe not. Because in that moment that the dog meets someone and that person is depressed, the dog may also react differently. The dog might react in an unfamiliar or unwanted behavior. For instance, someone has cancer and you bring your dog into the cancer ward. Some dogs are going to feel that, uh-oh, that person has a weird energy, and I'm worried that my mommy, who's the handler, is going to get hurt by that person. And you might see kind of these crazy things where, like on some of the airlines, you know, somebody is perceived by the dog to be a threat. So a therapy dog, and let's start kind of at the bottom, a therapy dog is a great dog who is friendly and loves everyone and is calm. But a therapy dog should be the clown of the dog family. A therapy dog is typically, it's just a pet with a volunteer, but it's that good dog that you met as a kid that made you love dogs, that yellow lab that was 10 years old, that golden that was 8 years old, that French bulldog who would roll on his back and would kind of look like Batman on some kind of weird fantasy trip. But those are good because you want the dog, for a therapy dog, you want a dog who's going to be calm and who's going to be comfortable lying down in different areas and getting into different positions. If it's a dog like a smaller breed, you might want to have a little towel or blanket that you place on the person or on the bed, wherever the dog is going to be, so that the dog can feel that comfort of having a soft place to lay down. But a dog who you get at a shelter or a dog who you get and you have less than like a year and a half or so, especially depending on the age, you shouldn't be bringing around people who might not be stable or people with Alzheimer's or other issues that could potentially cause the person to act inappropriately or erratically. So you want to start where your dog, no matter what you're going to do with them, is around stable people first, stable children, older children. And then you start and you bring the dog near them. And you have short interactions, which you're going to build up. And if anybody's really interested in either service dog, emotional support dog, or therapy dog training classes, we do provide those at Merlin's Kids. So depending on what you want to do, we can actually give you a 16-week or a 38-week class and lots of hands-on hours to teach your dog what to do and how to do it, and to teach you. Because if you have a great, sweet, especially if it's a really cute dog and it just loves people, but it's pretty calm demeanor, those are the dogs who are going to be best to be a therapy dog. A dog who's over bonded to the owner probably isn't going to be as good of a therapy dog because, let's face it, the dog wants to be with you. Now, that doesn't mean that it can't be a great therapy dog. It just means that it might be a little bit harder because the dog is going to first want to be near you and second be near the strangers. So when we have at Merlin's Kids, when we're training our service dogs and we are evaluating and training them for 4 to 6 months before we even really start training them for service dog work, but that's during the time that we make sure that the dogs don't have any personality quirks. We test them out. One of the things we look for, if a dog is able to work really well for multiple handlers, it makes him not just potentially a good service dog, but it makes them a great therapy dog. A dog who only works for one handler is probably not going to be the best. It doesn't mean it's not, but these are traits, general traits that I'm helping you to, guide you into which direction typically you should go, depending on who your dog is. And I used to see this all the time in the horse world. And for those of you who don't know, I come from a very, very strong horse background since I was about, well, a few years old. I've been riding and competing in dressage and some jumping and such, Western, like Western pleasure, and then dressage and some equitation, things like that. I know that's a new language for some of you. But when you come from a horse background, you realize that horses, although people don't understand them at all, horses do have completely different personalities. And you can put 10 different people on a horse, and the horse will behave in 10 completely different ways. I used to get on a horse for a client, for let's say a child who was maybe 15 or 12, and was a good rider, but I would get on and jump a course or school the horse and get it all ready, and then I would put the child on, and the horse would clock the child around the course, and the child would win. But it really was not the way to do it because honestly, I was teaching the horse how to go over the course, and the child was basically just packing around automatically. So it didn't matter almost what the child did because the horse knew, oh, okay, I do this, I do this, I do this, and then I do that. So think about if you have a dog like that who follows directions really, really well, a dog who like this, like the horse we were talking about, a dog who is comfortable having a trainer or having different people handling it or riding it, or, the dog obviously isn't going to be ridden. But that same concept where the animal trusts almost any human, those dogs can also be great for facility dogs, for institutional service dogs, meaning that they can be in a nursing home, a courtroom. We have a new dog going into the courtroom in New Jersey very, very shortly, like literally within weeks. We have, boy, I've done so many service dog placements in the last 6 weeks. Like, I think we have 12 that I've done from everywhere from San Diego to Minneapolis to Kansas City to Denver, to Westbury, to Westchester, to New Jersey, to Pennsylvania, all over. And one thing I see is they think they know, what their dog would be good for. You know, honestly, about 1 in 100 dogs has what it takes to be a service dog. About 1 in 10 has what it takes to be a therapy dog. But probably about 4 out of 5 have what it takes to be an emotional support dog. So let's talk about that. What does an emotional support dog do? Does it do anything? It doesn't have to. And they're not service dogs. They're not categorized as service dogs. They cannot go to restaurants, cannot go in areas where there's food. They cannot be in a shopping mall. They are our dogs who are just great dogs and give us comfort, make us feel safe, make us feel loved. Well, I don't know about you guys, but even my dogs who aren't trained to be, you know, highly trained service dogs for 2 years, they're still emotionally supportive. That's why we get them. Why would we get a pet? Why do we like things that have fur or feathers, right? Why don't we typically like things that have bumpy, scaly skin? Although, and snakes, folks, are very soft. So people always say, ooh, snakes are gross. They're really not. But why do we're so sensory, right? Doesn't it make us feel great to pet any dog? Especially if we have our own dog and that dog emotionally supports us. The dog makes us feel better. Well, I have a question. How many of you guys would have gotten a dog if you didn't want it to emotionally support you? It's kind of crazy if you think about it. Every dog in the world who's with a person who's taking care of it right and who loves it, it's our emotional support dog. Of course it is. It's a dog, and it's giving us the support and the comfort that we need in that moment. That's why we get a pet. It's also wonderful to be able to take care of something else, to be able to see how it reacts, to see that it loves us unconditionally. So emotional support dogs, to me, pretty much every dog, other than if it's a protective patrol dog or junkyard dog that's just there to, you know, scare people away. 4 out of 5 of the dogs in the world either are or could be emotional support dogs. But here's the difference. An emotional support dog, because it doesn't go in public typically, right? An emotional support dog could be aggressive. Service dog or therapy dog, no way. But an emotional support dog, if it doesn't go out of our house and we manage it, doesn't matter what the temperament is. Doesn't matter if it urinates and defecates all over the place because it's still providing the emotional support to the owner. So you see what I'm saying is an emotional support dog. To me, every dog is emotional support. But there are people who kind of need more. They don't quite need a service dog, but they need more. They need to have a dog who is able to go with them, maybe on a plane because they're scared of flying. Maybe in their, you know, hotel room, or maybe in their home because they're scared, they've had some trauma in their life, or they just have anxiety. So why not train any of the emotional support dogs? Why not train them, therapy dogs, and of course, real service dogs? Why don't we just train them all the same way, teach them that they're not allowed to cause problems, they're not allowed to be aggressive, they're not allowed to go, you know, defecate or urinate in public, in a store or on a floor or on a carpet. Why don't we just kind of teach them all? Why don't we require, or why don't we offer training classes by someone who is an expert, not by your local person who says, oh, I've had dogs my whole life. There are some great, phenomenal obedience trainers out there who can help you with your dog if it's just going to be an emotional support dog, even possibly a therapy dog, because the training isn't that intensive. It's basically making sure the dog isn't going to be aggressive, making sure that the dog is housebroken, making sure it doesn't jump or try to bite somebody, right? So I think that we should all kind of join together. And we do have classes that we're happy to offer to people through Merlin's Kids so that people can learn the right way. Like, you can actually learn the right way. And is there only one right way? You can use treats and all. I call it obedience through obesity. But yeah, for a therapy dog or emotional support dog, sure, you can use that. I don't believe in shock collars and prong collars and squirt bottles and choker chains and yanking and pulling and screaming and yelling and intimidation and fear. I believe that dogs are very intuitive. And when you start using fear or intimidation, especially with a dog who has an unknown background, you're asking for trouble. And that's what happened with one of my particular patients who the people didn't know that apparently the dog had had an embedded collar. I figured it out. And as soon as you go to grab the dog's collar, it would nail you. It was the best dog in the world until you went to grab for the collar area. And the dog had, because I looked underneath, it was a longer haired dog, a shepherd mix. And I looked underneath and I was touching it and all, and it let me do that like it wouldn't let most people do. And I looked and I said, look, there's all this hair missing that goes about half or two thirds of the way around the dog's neck. You know what that means? And they said, oh, it had an infection. I was like, no, it's an embedded collar. Do you know how many people in certain areas of the country particularly will keep a collar on a dog, a young dog, and they never loosen it and they never take it off? And the collar actually becomes a part of the dog, and the skin and the muscle and the hair grows around the embedded collar so that you won't even see it or feel it, but you'll feel a thickening. Sometimes these dogs actually get severe infections, but I've seen rusty, disgusting, pus-filled pockets all the way around a dog's neck and throat. And people say, oh, yeah, you know, he got some kind of he must have eaten something, or he must have had something happen, when it could be something as simple as having an embedded collar. So imagine now that you've had the embedded collar removed and treated, do you think the dog suddenly feels like, oh, it will never hurt me again, so I don't need to bite anyone? No. But what happens is the dog is still thinking that that embedded collar is a part of it because it's got that memory. And yes, I will argue with anyone on this. Dogs remember things. Dogs think of things. Dogs can have PTSD. Why do you think sometimes a dog is terrified of a particular person or a particular ethnic background or a particular smell or a particular item or object? Yes, it's not always that a dog had a bad experience, but think about something unpleasant that happened in your life. And then think about what would happen if those same circumstances presented again. You would get those same feelings back. That's what PTSD is. It's having the same thing happen over and over again, even though it's not happening in reality. It's very real how you feel when that happens and someone has an issue. So for instance, a veteran with PTSD, he's out in Vietnam, let's say. It's a beautiful country. So he's walking through a forested area and all of a sudden a tree cracks. He gets down on the ground and starts screaming and you think, oh my gosh, this guy's nuts. No, that's PTSD. And guess what? Dogs, sometimes horses, can have that happen. So how do you fix that? You fix it behaviorally. You teach the dog and you teach the family what to do, where we set up almost the same scenario, but not quite. And you start getting the dog desensitized to the triggers that were causing that. These are things we go through in my classes. And if you have a dog with behavioral issues, and this sounds like, wow, Janice, you're talking about my dog. Are you talking about my cousin's dog? Are you talking about my friend's dog? This is exactly what happens. He's the best dog in the world. And then something happens and oh my God, he turns into Cujo, or he turns into mush, or he pees on the floor, or he poops himself, whatever it is. There are reasons that this happens. So what I want you to think about, and if this sounds like something you're interested in, I will hold classes and I will have everybody who's interested be able to be on. We'll do a couple of classes, a little short, maybe half hour, 45 minutes. I'll do it free of charge for you guys. I love all of you. You've been listening to me for a long time. Some people are new. Some people have been with me for 15 or 20 years through all the different stations I've been affiliated with. So what I want you to do is reach out to me, and you can actually reach out via the station, or you can email info@united9pros.com. If you can't get through on that one, you can email unitedk9pros@gmail.com and reference this offer. Hey, I'm happy to help you guys, especially if you're a veteran or if you're someone who's looking to train your dog legitimately to be a dog to help you as an emotional support dog. I'm happy to help you. Now, I also train, obviously, service dogs, and those dogs get between 1,000 and 2,500 hours of hands-on actual behavioral training, plus they also get something which is super important, which is public access exposure. But you can't take your ill-behaved, growly dog out to, you know, Home Depot, because they're going to kick you out, and then you're going to give your dog bad experiences. So I'm happy to help anybody who's interested in that, and I hope you guys will take us up on the offer. And if you have a dog who has issues, whether it's aggression or it's something that you know isn't good, especially fear and fear aggression, I'm here to help you. We have a team all around the country. We have people in 11 different countries. So we can help you wherever you are. You can also get a copy of my book, which is a great start to teach you the foundations of how dogs think and why dogs do what they do. You know that book. It's called Shh Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101. You can get it on Amazon. It's less than $10. So that's going to start helping you. And we also have an amazing new facility. We have two new facilities in New Jersey. One of them is 13,000 square feet on many, many, many acres. The other one is 70,000 square feet, state of the art. It will be the best of the best of the best of the best, unlike anything anywhere else in the world. Tens of millions of dollars going to go into this. And we are going to have classes and training, but the best of the best, top end. We're going to have pet products. We're going to have custom-made items. We're going to have boarding, but not just boarding in a kennel. Boarding where your dog is going to actually be with somebody and walking through this amazing facility. 70,000 square feet is big, folks. We're going to be able to have events. So if you're part of a rescue or shelter and you want to do an event, we're going to help you out and give you space, event space, so that you can bring your people in and have events. We're going to have all kinds of really cool things going on. We're going to have underwater treadmills and tanks. We're going to have a swimming pool inside for dogs. Yeah, for dogs. Why not? And we're going to have the best people. All of our people are going to be certified canine behaviorists through United Canine Professionals. If you want to be part of it, you can contact us at 1-855-4-K9-PROS, or the number I gave you, the email address I gave you earlier, united9pros@gmail.com, unitedk9pros@gmail.com. And if you're looking for a job opportunity, or if you're looking for your dog to be something even more wonderful than he already is, you got to give us a call or email us and let us know. We will help you. We have help for you anywhere in the country. And if you're a veteran or if you're an individual who needs a service dog or needs your dog trained to be a service dog or a therapy dog or an emotional support dog, which are all completely understand what the dogs are capable of, and not set them up for failure, but to set them up for success. We don't want you to do something silly that's going to get your dog in trouble, because in that moment, the dog is is frightened or being dominant. These are things that we are expert at. And not every dog can do this. So we will evaluate your dog. Honestly, we don't need people. We have lots and lots and lots of people. We get over probably 1,500 applications a year for service dogs. We can only put out about 100. So, and those are the best dogs. You'll never see better behaved, better trained dogs than ours. So if your dog has what it takes, we'll help you. If your dog doesn't have what it takes, we'll still help you. Because maybe if you love the dog enough, and if you can really commit some time to it, maybe you can still do it. I believe that every child and every animal has capabilities inside that will allow it and you to become a better version of yourselves. And that's what we want to help you to do. So if you need help, 855-4-CANINE-PROS. Or UnitedK9Pros@gmail.com. Check out United Canine Pros on the internet and check out Merlin's Kids and, of course, Wyatt's List, which is going to give you all that great information, wyattslist.com. We're happy to help you. Hope everyone has a healthy, happy, wonderful weekend. And remember, life is good and you can change it and you can enjoy and have the best life possible with your pet. Everyone have a great weekend. Love you.